News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVEL. J.R. Byrd, Republican candidate for Utah's 3rd Congressional District, which includes Uinta Basin and much of eastern Utah, including Carbon and Emery Counties, Grant County, Wasatch County, and the northern part of Utah County and southern part of Salt Lake County. Now, J.R. Byrd is mayor of Roosevelt and is the only candidate from rural Utah. Your choices for Congressional District 3 are J.R. Byrd, Mike Kennedy, Case Lawrence, Stuart Pay, and John Dougal. J.R. Byrd, did I describe your area well?
Yeah, you did.
Did I miss anything?
You know what? It's such a large district. 12 counties is what encompasses our district, and it is one of the largest geographical districts in the state. It's going to be a massive undertaking, obviously, to make sure that we cover adequately that district, but I'm up for the challenge and excited about it. But yeah, I think you got them all, Steve, and thanks for having me on this morning, by the way.
You're welcome. I think this is the biggest congressional district in Congress, is it not?
Congressional District 2 is close, but I think you're right. Congressional District 3 is the largest geographical district in Congress in the state.
J.R. Byrd, you have a lot of momentum right now. Could you describe to us what's happening as of today on the campaign for Congressional District 3?
Sure. What's happening right now, we're moving up in the polls. We're doing well with advertising, getting out, knocking doors. We're having a really good response. The race is getting tighter and tighter. We were about middle of the pack when we came out of convention and really hit the advertising and social media and things like that hard. I've been, again, knocking doors and going to meet and greets. We haven't slowed down a bit, and we continue to tighten that gap, and I think we've got an excellent shot at this race and feeling really good about our position.
The campaign messaging that you're having in your advertising is right on for rural Utah. Do you feel that you are a better candidate for the citizens of rural Utah? Of course, Uinta Basin, absolutely. But what about the rest of the potential constituents in the rest of your district in rural Utah?
Absolutely. You know, growing up in rural Utah in the Uinta Basin, the whole eastern side of the state has very similar issues with public lands, and you know, we're heavily involved in energy, mineral extraction, you know, mining, and not only for uranium but coal, and then drilling for oil and gas. We all have similar situations and problems. So being raised in that and having that life experience, I think it's very important to represent rural Utah. You know, dealing with the BLM, dealing with permitting, dealing with the federal government on a lot of the issues that affect us and affect our economies, I think it's very important going into this race and representing our district at the federal level.
Former Representative Rob Bishop is in town promoting a book about his experience in Congress and the state legislature and serving the citizens of Utah in both of those positions and as a teacher. And we were talking about your campaign on the air, and I asked him who I should vote for Congressional District 3, and he said, without a question, J.R. Byrd. And he pointed to your background, your knowledge of public lands, and your understanding of rural issues. Is that's news to you this morning? That I asked if he would endorse him, and he said absolutely. So you have his endorsement as of today.
That's fantastic. You know, I've always respected Rob Bishop. First of all, thank you, Rob Bishop, for that endorsement. That means a lot, especially coming from somebody that is well-educated in our district, has really fought for rural Utah, fought for our public lands issues, our energy issues, and has done a great job to represent our district. That's an honor for me to receive that endorsement. Thank you for sharing that with me this morning, Steve. That just, again, fuels the fire, builds the momentum, and, just very flattered that he would do that and excited, frankly.
Why is it important that we have a congressional representative? This is the first time in over 100 years that we've had a congressional representative, should you win, serve in Congress. Why is it important to have someone from rural Utah?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it goes back to kind of my similar answer to what I've answered previously. But as I've gone around the state and the district talking to people, I've had the question, why federal? Why didn't you run for state office first? Why did you go to the federal office? And I said, because the things that affect our district are dictated at the federal level. They are decided at the federal level. And so that is why I'm so interested. Again, you know, the public lands issues, BLM, that is impacted and decided at the federal level. And having somebody from rural Utah with that experience is important. You know, we have currently the BLM come out with a ruling that would make conservation a land use. Now, that would be devastating for our economies and for our livelihoods in rural Utah, because what that means is people with a lot of money could buy leases for conservation, tie up a lot of land that otherwise would be used for grazing, ranching, you know, mineral extraction, recreation, those types of things. And it's a very dangerous precedent to set, and it's something that we have to battle. I know John Curtis is fighting against this with the West Act, but it's something that we need somebody that understands that, that lives here, that has that experience, that can advocate for that at the federal level.
So now you can actually buy up lease land from the BLM for conservation purposes?
That is what the BLM is proposing. That's the new ruling they have, and it's being battled right now. And again, that's why the West Act, from my understanding, is being pushed by Congressman Curtis. And again, that would be devastating.
Frightening news.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's one of those things that we've got to be very careful of, and we've got to have advocates, the boots on the ground that are in the battle, they know what's going on, to make sure that we have good representation to fight these battles at the federal front.
Well, it seems like the environmental extremists and lobbying group have an endless supply of money, and coming out and buying up swaths of federal land, or are they just buying the leases on this land?
Yeah, buying the leases on the land and leasing it for conservation. So nothing else can be, no other use can be made on that land. And so that is the concern. That is the fear. These are lands that historically, for the last 200 years, we have been, you know, nobody knows how to take care of the land better than those that are the stewards of the land, those that live on the land. I mean, you look at the positive impacts we've had. You know, grazing is not a negative. It's actually positive. Timbering is not a negative. It's actually positive, done, you know, correctly and appropriately. And we need to make sure that these lands are open for those types of things. You wouldn't let your yard just, go weeks and weeks without any pruning or trimming or mowing or anything like that. And you know that it's much healthier when you do those things. And it's the same with our public lands. And to think that, you know, conservation and not touching the land is best for the land is not not wise. The land was given to man for use, and that's what we should do. Use and benefit of man. So.
I was speaking with former Representative Bishop today on the air, and I asked him what the perception was from people from the East, from legislators on the East, about the perception of public lands in the West. And he said Yellowstone. They think it's Yellowstone or Arches National Park, all of it.
Right.
Are you in a better position to educate people? I know John Curtis has been very active in promoting what lands are actually consist of public lands here. Are you in a better position? Is this a passion for you more so than the other candidates in your race?
Absolutely. You know, working in the oil and gas industry, I see, you know, the impacts that we have on the land, and I want to make sure that those impacts are minimized and mitigated. And we're doing that as an oil and gas industry. And where we drill, to be completely honest, I've always said this, there isn't a better place in the country to drill than in the Uinta Basin, especially south of Mike, because it's just, there's nothing out there. It's fairly desolate, and, there's not a lot of impacts. And so, you know, but being a part of that and being a part of our community in rural Utah, I love to recreate. I love to go to the national forest, and I like to hunt. I like to fish and do all of those things. And I want to make sure that those lands are protected more than anyone else, especially those from back east. And so living it and being in the middle of it gives us a unique advantage, in my opinion, of how to administer those lands and how to take care of those lands. Nobody wants to be a better steward of those lands than the people that are living right there, that actually, participate in that recreation and get that benefit out of the land. we love the lands, and we want to make sure that we take care of those lands.
Weaponization of the federal government and federal agencies, weaponization of the judicial system. It seems like we're abdicating a lot of the legislative power to federal agencies and to the executive branch, who seems to be governing like a king through executive orders. Are these issues that will be a priority for you should you become our congressional representative?
100%. This is something that I've mentioned, you know, as I've been campaigning throughout the district, is there is a major imbalance between the power and roles of government at the federal level and from the federal level to the state, as a matter of fact. But the weaponization of the executive branch with executive orders is what has caused a lot of the problems that we face. So if you look at the border and the pendulum shift from Trump's policies to Biden's policies, if you look at energy and the swing from Trump's policies to Biden policies and the devastation that that's had on America, that's been able to happen through those executive orders and through the centralization of power to the executive branch, when in all reality, that power should be held by Congress. And those things, those decisions and policies or regulations and laws that are implemented should be decided at the congressional level. The only authority that the executive branch holds in Section 2, or Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution is that it's called the Take Care Clause, and that is to execute the laws that Congress has passed. Now, because of some of the laws that Congress has passed are implicit or vague, back in 1984, the judicial branch ruled on the Chevron case that anything that is implicit in the law can be decided at the bureaucracy level, at the BLM level or those bureaucracies. And they are to interpret or to define within that scope. Now, that Chevron deference is being battled, and in my opinion, if the law is implicit or vague, then those bureaucracies need to go back to Congress and say, we need some explanation on this, and Congress needs to define what those bureaucracies are to do, and not to function on their own or to fill in the gaps themselves. Does that make sense?
It does.
A little bit confusing, but in all reality, Congress is who sets the laws, and if there is any implicity in the law or vagueness in the law, then that needs to go back to Congress for clarification, not the bureaucracy. And that's what Chevron deference will do if this is ruled, overruled and ruled back to the Congress. And Congress needs to take that responsibility. But at the same time, we need to rein in those executive orders, and we need to make sure as a Republican Party that we're not participating in centralizing that power to the executive branch, just like the Democrats. So,
Trump, is there a two-tier judicial system? And secondly, is Trump being persecuted by enemies in the judicial system, namely in New York, the entire state of New York, it seems, the judicial branch from the federal government to the state of New York to Georgia to wherever, seems to have it in for President Trump. And is he being treated fairly?
Well, this stems, you know, the way Trump has been treated began in 2016 with the Russian collusion and the Mueller report and the falsified documents against him. And that really instilled a lot of doubt in the American people, not only with the FBI, but the government and the judicial branch. And yes, it appears that there is a two-tier system, and that has continued throughout not only his presidency, but even after he has, not been president. But he... You know, this looks to me like a weaponization of the judicial branch to destroy an opponent close to an election. And the doubt has been instilled in the American mind clear back in 2016. And that is the most devastating effect. Not only is this a worry, because if this happens to Trump, this could happen to any one of us, but the doubt that this is instilled in the American people and the faith that has been lost by the American people in the judicial and justice system is devastating in my mind.
Are the American people losing faith in federal government and our federal agencies?
Yeah, I do believe that they have lost a lot of faith. I mean, we see $34.7 trillion in debt. We see energy policies that are out of whack. We see border policies. People are wondering what is going on. And what it stems from, in my opinion, Steve, is the lack of transparency and accountability at the federal level. So one of the things that I'm adamant about once elected is I want to be on the oversight committee, and I want to make sure that there's complete transparency and accountability in everything that we do at the federal level. That would help educate the public on what's happening, to help them be empowered to make different decisions as it relates to who they elect into office. That will also help when we talk about, you know, the imbalance of power at the federal level, going back to constitutional law and making sure that we reestablish that balance of power, making sure that we follow proper process and procedure, which we're not doing right now. So, yeah, there's a lack of faith, but it's because there's a lack of accountability at the federal level. And there's a lack of following the Constitution and following law. We've gotten to a habit of doing things out of convenience, doing things out of, political expediency. And this is the problem. We need to be doing things for the benefit of the American people. We need to be doing things correctly according to the Constitution and really protecting the American public and our American way of life.
Switching subjects to the southern border, somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 million illegal immigrants have invaded our southern border since Biden took office 3.5 years ago. What is the motivation behind the federal government, the Biden administration, in your mind, opening the borders and creating this chaos? I mean, they're incentivizing, providing housing and food care, gift cards, Visa gift cards, transportation. What in your mind is the motivation behind this government action?
Well, first of all, I thought the Biden administration said the border is secure.
Well, he changed his mind this week.
Oh yeah, just recently. That's right. Because again, like I mentioned, political expediency. So I think it was a complete orchestrated plan to get as many immigrants into the country as possible before an election, and then when we're getting closer to the election and seeing how unpopular that has been, now they're capitulating on that and trying to implement a policy that's similar to the Remain in Mexico, but much more loose, and it's frustrating to watch. And I'll tell you, there's no one more frustrated about this than the person that has come to America legally, right? That has went through the process, that has taken years to actually get their visa, come across, pay tens of thousands of dollars to be here legally, and then watch this. I don't even know how to describe it, just this hypocrisy happened where you have people that are coming to the border illegally, being paroled into our country, giving all of these benefits and everything else. It is exactly opposite of what we should be doing at the border. We're incentivizing poor behavior, and we're punishing good behavior. I have a friend that is in Peru right now. He's been in Peru 2 years because he went back after he overstayed his visa during COVID because of travel restrictions. Didn't think that it was going to be that big of a deal. Went back to visit his family because his mother had passed away. And he has been there 2 years now trying to get back to the United States legally. And we have hundreds of thousands of people flooding across the border through an exploited parole provision in the law. And it's because due to the Biden administration, it's completely political. And it's devastating to, the states that are impacted. We are being impacted by that in Utah. And one other thing that I'll mention with that is we've all become border states because of the Biden policies at the border. And for Utah, I'm a little disappointed because in 2022, instead of enacting laws to secure our border and to prevent illegals from flooding into Utah, we did just the opposite. We gutted E-Verify in 2022 that went from employers with 15 employees being required to utilize E-Verify to employers with 150 employees. So we've loosened those restrictions and really incentivized people to come to Utah because of the way we gutted E-Verify. And that has been, we've been labeled a sanctuary state by some, but we can't behave like a sanctuary state and not be labeled as a sanctuary state. Does that make sense?
It does. Are we losing our liberties promised by the Declaration of Independence and by the Constitution?
I believe we are, yes. And, it's frustrating to watch. And that is part of the reason I'm running. My goal is to make sure that the America that I was born in, with the freedoms and you know, the pride that we had in America and the opportunities that we had in America and all of these things that were available to me growing up, I want to make sure that that's available to my children. I have a new grandbaby that was born just a month ago, and I think
congratulations. I didn't know that. Congratulations to you and Brandy.
Thank you so much. His name's Leo, and you know, I look at his future, and I think we have got to stop this nonsense. We have got to get back to the rule of law, to law and order, and we have to start protecting our freedoms. We have to start protecting our sovereignty and our border, and we have to make sure that we have provide our children with the same America and the same opportunities that we were afforded when we were growing up. And we're in a tough spot right now.
J.R. Byrd, thank you for joining us. We're running out of time, unfortunately. In the final few minutes that we have, are there some final thoughts that you'd like to leave with the voters here in Uinta and Duchesne counties?
Absolutely. First of all, thanks so much again for having me on the show, Steve. This has been an honor to be with you. I'm grateful again to have the endorsement of Rob Bishop. I'll tell you, we haven't had representation in rural Utah at the federal level for around 100 years or over 100 years. And this is the first opportunity we have that is a legitimate opportunity. And what we need, what I ask of the voters in rural Utah, is to come out like you've never come out to vote before. Our numbers in Duchesne County have historically been around 35 to 38% turnout. We need 60, 65, 70% turnout in rural Utah. And if we can get that type of turnout in rural will dictate who the next elected official is at the federal level in our district. And every vote counts. I know a lot of people have been disenfranchised. Oh, my vote does not count. In this election, it absolutely does. So go to the polls, vote. I would ask for your vote, birdforcongress.com, and appreciate everything that Rural has done for me in this election. It's been a wonderful opportunity and experience.
J.R. Byrd, thank you so much for taking time to visit with us today. J.R. Byrd, Republican candidate for Utah's 3rd Congressional District, which, of course, includes much of rural Utah, including here in the Uinta Basin. And again, we appreciate you taking the time to visit with us, and good luck with your campaign.
Thank you, Steve.
I'm Steve Evans, and this is News Talk 104.5 FM and AM 920 KVL. Thank you for joining us.